in the changing relationship between Canada and China, and some issues specific to our relationship with China. We welcome to the program Dr. Charles Burton. He's a professor of political science at Brock University. In fact, served twice as counselor of political and economic affairs at the Canadian Embassy in Beijing, so someone with quite a wealth of knowledge on this topic. Dr. Burton, appreciate your time here. Welcome to the program.
Morning, Rob.
Well, you know, as I stated in the opening, much has changed in China. I mean, 10 years ago, Canada was pretty much as it is. But certainly in the past 10 years, a lot has changed in China. How has it changed our relationship with the Chinese?
Well, I guess we used to primarily sell a lot of wheat into China, and Saskatchewan potash was another big thing that we sold them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't need as much wheat as they used to because they've improved their own productivity of wheat and people are eating differently. So that part of our trade's gone down, and we're trying to establish more trade with them in more sophisticated market areas like services, banking, and insurance. But Canada has not been able to maintain its market share of the Chinese market, and that's a cause for some concern, I think, as other nations seem to be, you know, getting more into the Chinese market, and Canada is lagging behind.
Well, and let's talk about what we seem to be selling more of to China, will be selling more of to China. That is oil, natural gas, energy, because China is becoming each year a bigger and bigger energy consumer. That matters now a lot more. Talk about how that need for energy has changed the dynamic here.
Well, I guess that we have it, they need it.
Yep.
But on the other hand, they have other sources of energy as well, and they you know, they get a lot of oil out of Iran, and they work some deals where they're probably assisting the Iranians in their missile program and getting some benefits from engaging in activity that the international community doesn't entirely approve of in that area. So, you know, Canada is one country of many competing to sell energy resources into China. And I think that a lot of it depends on how our Prime Minister and our embassy in Beijing is able to promote our energy resources and see that we're able to capture a good share of that enormous market.
Well, it is an enormous market, and that's added another dimension to this, because it's to the point now we need the Chinese to a certain extent. We need access to that market. Maybe it wasn't the case in the past, so now we got to factor that in. If we're going to push the Chinese on certain issues, say human rights or the political situation, now we're in a situation where there could be some detriment to Canada because we rely on trade with China.
Oh, I think that's definitely so. I mean, we certainly have much less leverage with China than we used to, and of course China is very important to Canada. But Canada is not that important to China. Like, we're one relatively unimportant country to them. They're receiving visits by high-level delegations from, you know, all the nations of the world, really. And so we don't have a good negotiating position. What we really have to be able to do is to compete on price, quality of service, and to establish relationships with the Chinese that will cause them to think of Canada when they want to buy something. And I think that it's in the relationships area that we have been falling down compared to, say, Australia and the United States.
Where's the right balance? I mean, it would be negligent, I think, for the Prime Minister to ignore the human rights situation in that country. On the other hand, it wouldn't really accomplish much if he made a big scene and stormed out and then flew home. I don't know what that would accomplish. So where's the balance there?
Well, I think there are many issues of concern, and you're right. I mean, it is easy for the Chinese to simply say, well, you know, the Canadians have insulted us, and why should we do business with people that that don't show us the respect that we deserve? And aside from the human rights issue, which is, of course, a very important issue to Canadians because of the very bad human rights situation in China and lack of respect for the international human rights norms, there are also other areas. For example, in Japan, the Prime Minister has been encouraging the Japanese to expand their military to make a greater contribution to peacekeeping and regional security. And the Chinese find that suggestion by Canada very, very disturbing because they don't want any Japanese increase in militarism because of the Second World War and because of the impact of their desire to retake the island of Taiwan to sovereignty of Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are many, many areas in which the Chinese are very sensitive, and we really, if we start pushing buttons and getting a negative nationalistic response out of China, then we will suffer economically. Basically, you know, we buy a lot from China and our economy is very dependent on those cheap Chinese goods. And the question is how, while preserving our Canadian values and doing the right thing to the Chinese people, can we redress the trade balance? And there are two ways. One is to sell stuff to China, and the other is to encourage the Chinese to reinvest some of the profits they're getting from Canada into Canada by investing in critical Canadian sectors, which mm-hmm. leads to a whole other can of worms of concerns about foreign ownership of critical Canadian resource sectors.
There seems to be a hope today and a notion today that probably not much different than it was 30, 35 years ago or even longer than that, that if we work with the Chinese, if we don't ostracize the Chinese, the situation in that country politically, the human rights situation, will improve. It may be a gradual improvement, but it will improve. Has that strategy paid off, and do you think it still seems to be the approach today?
Well, I don't think that we can attribute too much to anything that Canada has done as such. I think most of the positive changes in China have occurred because of decisions of the Chinese government. Mm-hmm. I was a student in China in the 1970s when it was a very, very bad period there with terrific censorship and a lot of people in prison camps and torture and pretty much every human right that you could imagine was being violated very vigorously by that regime in the name of making revolution. Well, since that time, things have improved terrifically, and there's much more access to information. There are far fewer people in prison simply because of their political views. And in other areas, China's also improved its human rights record. So you have to keep it within context. While the human rights situation in China remains very, very bad, it would really be wrong to say that things are not much better now than they were mm-hmm. in the Mao period, when things were really about as bad as you can imagine.
Yeah, I suppose we only have to look to North Korea to see. I mean, there's obviously a marked difference in the situation
yes.
in China versus North Korea.
Yes, I mean, North Korea is really what China was in the 60s and mm-hmm. the 70s, and so I think that there's a question of balance there. But insofar as what Canada can do, of course, the Prime Minister, I think, should express concern about situations in China, and I understand that probably that's not going to happen, but, we have lists of family members of Canadians who are in prison for reasons that we think are unjust, and we know we have lists of prisoners that we think shouldn't be in Chinese prisons but are in there because of political reasons, and we'd like to know how they're doing. And I think that by giving over those lists, we send a message to the Chinese that we're paying attention and that we're concerned about these things. But I my understanding is that the Prime Minister will not be handing any over of these sorts of lists. But there are other areas in which we've been doing good work. The Canadian government's been involved in training senior Chinese judges and providing education to make them more aware of how our judicial system works, and you hope that that'll fit into the system there. And a myriad of other projects to support, like the non-governmental sector, encourage environmental and women's NGOs, and to give Chinese people a greater sense of citizenship and that they should participate in, the politics of their country. And certainly we stand ready to help them if they wanted help in how to administer elections and so on. Of course, Canada's there. They just have to ask us, and we're there in a flash. And so I think that there is only so much that we can do to change the domestic arrangements of China, and that trade and more interaction with the outside world has got to be a good thing. And Canada isolating China probably really won't have any impact mm-hmm. in China to speak of. I don't think anyone would really notice it.
Yeah, probably. Let me get you to hold the line here, Dr. Burton, and we'll come back and talk a bit more about what may come of this meeting and where China itself is going. Certainly this could be the century where China really emerges as a global superpower. So how do the Chinese view themselves? Dr. Charles Burton, our guest, he's professor of political science at Brock University. As we mentioned, has served twice at the Canadian Embassy in Beijing. It's Rob Breckenridge in for Dave Rutherford. We're back after this.
The Morning News with Mike Wilson on CHQR.
On our next program, I'll be gone. Guest host show.